ben Gerard van den Berg.
En I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 199. Yes, 199. Recorded on 29 November 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill.
Also this week, the SABC, DSTV and NN7. ICASA wants data to expire after a minimum of 3 years. And was Black Friday a waste of time?
I think so. It's Wednesday for a change, and it's time to talk all things technology.
Welcome to Talk Central. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Great, thanks. Sorry we missed the show last week, but events conspired. So we're recording on a Wednesday because this Friday is also looking a bit...
I took the blame for last week, you'll take the blame for this week.
Yeah. But episode 199, one to go to 200, and we'll no doubt do it before the end of the year.
Can't wait. What a milestone.
Probably squeeze in one or two more before we disappear for Christmas.
We have to. What do you mean breaking up for Christmas? We work straight through, don't we, us general work people?
That's true. There's always a laptop near me.
Freelancers, you know, you never get an end of it.
But I'm taking my longest holiday this year than I've taken in about 10 years.
So fantastic.
Really looking forward to 2 weeks at the coast.
Oh, beautiful.
But yeah, I'll have my laptop with me in case of anything
of course,
big.
Yeah.
The life of a journalist. Lots of interesting stuff happening. We've been a bit quiet on the Tech Central podcast front over the last few weeks. Again, my fault, just been very busy. But recorded a great podcast with Andrew Fraser, friend of the show, Tuesday. And we recorded it at a studio in Parkhurst called Milk and Sugar. And it's an amazing the difference a proper studio makes to their audio quality.
Yeah.
It was the dead silent, proper soundproof studio.
And then the microphones can do what they need to do and just focus on the audio in front of them.
Yes.
So any chance we can move there for a few podcasts? Or is that
the owner said we're welcome to use the space. It's a fantastic facility, actually. And, I think there are opportunities to have some panel discussions. And, you know, he's got one of those, what they call infinity walls. For video shoots. Very nice setup.
I must go check it out. And also, what else is in Parkhurst? Lots of beer. So we can just combine the two and have a great podcast.
There we go. I like your thinking. So don't miss that podcast I did with Andrew Fraser. We were talking about the MultiChoice ANN7 deal, which has been all over the news since Friday. And, of course, there are more developments on MultiChoice this week, which actually we're in the middle of breaking right now. We're recording this podcast, and I'm going on to a call shortly after this to talk about some of the stuff. And I can't go into a lot of detail until I've actually got to the bottom of some of this stuff. But look out on Tech Central later today. We'll have a big story on this.
It's huge.
Check out the podcast with Andrew Fraser. I thought it was a very interesting summation of the digital migration project and MultiChoice and ANN7. Provided some good insight, I thought. And let us know what you thought of that audio quality, and maybe we'll record there more often. But before we dive into all of the week's news, let's do our quiz, Richard.
Definitely. So the first question in this week's quiz, what regulations does the SABC want scrapped so that it can start to charge DSTV to carry its free-to-air channels?
Black Friday is a US concept. It falls after an American public holiday. Which holiday is that?
The third question, the government of Benin ordered the CEO of MTN subsidiary in the country to leave. Who is he?
Macro this week announced a majority stake, or had acquired rather a majority stake in which fulfillment startup?
There was some good news there. And the last question, Samsung is rumored to be announcing details of the Galaxy S9 at which trade show early next year?
That's our quiz. We'll get to the answers, as always, at the end of the show. But let's get into the news. Let's just talk briefly about Bitcoin, because last night, it went through $10,000. It was last trading, I saw at $10,800. I said to my wife last night, you know, I'm so tempted to buy this. And if I'd bought then, I would have already made a 10% profit.
The question is, do you buy when it's this expensive? I mean,
the question is, I mean, I suppose the alternative to that is, the counter to that is, do I buy it while it's still so cheap?
Trading talk.
Before it gets to $100,000, you know. I'm tempted. I must say I am tempted. Bitcoin doesn't have the problems of fiat currency, and that government can't print more of it. It's a limited resource. it's privatized money in effect. You know, does it just keep going up because of the limited supply?
Well, I would imagine it could go up a lot more closer to that number, that finite number of hashes that can be mined. Because then after that, you know what, then that's a closed, or it's a competed system almost. I'm sure it'll take a long time to get there.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm sure it's going to go up. Must go up.
Well, I don't know. That's why I haven't bought. I mean, if it was obviously going to go up, I would have just gone straight onto Luna or one of these exchanges and bought. But I am kicking myself for not buying a few months ago. I mean, if you bought this thing at the beginning of the year and you'd put in 100,000 rand, you'd be a rich man right now.
Mm. But if we could predict these things, we would all be rich.
But it's the risk. Yeah. And it's run up so hard, I can't help thinking that there's going to be a major correction.
Well, it's happened before. It stopped before, and then it picked up again. So do you wait for that drop and then pick up a few? And then,
I mean, just a week or two ago, it dropped all the way down to something like $6,500, an ounce, $10,800. Sure. I mean, the returns you can make here are quite eye-watering. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've been talking to a lot of libertarian economists about it, and they are so gung-ho bullish on this. They talk $100,000 by 2020. They're talking $1 million. Eventually, if not more, for one Bitcoin.
Wow.
Hell.
I definitely missed the boat. There's no way I'm going to get Bitcoin now. That's just
what,
the reality.
What worries me is that every man and his dog is talking about buying Bitcoin now. You go to a dinner party and all the conversation is about, should we be buying Bitcoin? And that's almost always the sign that something has become a bubble. In 2000, everyone was saying, should I buy dot-com stocks? And everyone was buying dot-com stocks. And then the market collapsed.
Oh, they said stocks. I was just buying .coms. Oh, was that where I missed that one?
You missed
too?
The memo.
Damn. Okay, so I've got a lot of URLs up for grabs.
Well, you won because most of those .coms got wiped out.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a very interesting time. Crypto has been, I think, the biggest story of the year.
It is absolutely fantastic. I mean, I'm kind of angry at myself that I never fulfilled the mining thing. I really find that fascinating.
Yeah.
But again, you know, if you look at that industry, graphics cards being sold out all across South Africa because people are just mining. But I've seen a lot of things online where people are saying it's not really useful to mine now. There's some really good YouTube videos where people have calculated. If you get into it now, with electricity prices, obviously cost of the hardware, it's probably easier just to buy Bitcoin than to try and mine them.
Yes.
In terms of what you'll get out of it.
Yes. But it's. I mean, if you get in a time machine and go back 5 years, I'd be a Bitcoin miner for sure.
If we got a time machine, Bitcoin would be the least of our concerns.
True. I'd go forward in time, not back. Yeah.
Yeah, let's run away from this.
Let's find out what the future
looks like.
Rick and
Morty,
for sure. I've started watching that show for the first time recently. It's very good.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I didn't like it at first because I don't know. Just the first episode I watched didn't grab me. I'm a fan.
I've started watching it on Netflix, and we'll be doing more. I much prefer it to The Simpsons, which is really lost.
Yeah, The Simpsons, I lost the love for that a long time ago. But Family Guy is still up there.
I haven't seen it.
One of my favorites, so well worth it.
Is that a cartoon as well?
Also cartoons. Seth MacFarlane, he's got a few. American Dad is another one that he did. The Cleveland Show is a spin-off as well.
Okay.
It's really good. Good humor.
Great.
But we digress.
So I think... multi-choice is in a spot of bother, and that's putting it mildly. First of all, the revelations last week, News24 published the story that there was a fourth amendment to the channel supply agreement with ANN7, which is, of course, the Gupta-owned TV channel, now nominally, and I use that word emphasized, owned by Mzwanele Manye through a vendor financing deal with the Guptas. That story broke on News24 on Friday. Fourth channel amendment agreement, where they increased the payments to ANN7 from 50 million rand to 141 million rand a year, and made a 25 million rand upfront payment, ostensibly, I believe, so that ANN7 could improve the quality of its channel, which very clearly was needed. Suggestions that there were, this amounted to a kickback to help ensure that the Guptas, who were clearly micromanaging the Minister of Communications at the time, Faith Mutambi, emails were exchanged between the Guptas and Faith Mutambi, suggestions that this was some sort of kickback to try and influence government policy. Multi-choice has firmly denied that. They've rubbished the allegations. But now today, Phumzile van Dam, who is the DA MP and the party spokeswoman on communications, has published a sensational document which was submitted by the SABC to Parliament as part of the parliamentary inquiry, and she's just unearthed this in a big wad of documents. Minutes of a meeting that happened on the 6th of June 2013 at the SABC, at which Nolo Letele, the MultiChoice executive chairman, and Imtiaz Patel, the former MultiChoice CEO, who is now the CEO of Naspers Video Entertainment, were present, along with various SABC executives, including Claudie Mutsuneng, who's been fired from the broadcaster, Lulama Mokobo, who's the former chairman, Ellen Chabalala, another former chairman, and various other SABC executives. Now, what this document shows is that MultiChoice exerted enormous pressure on the SABC to side with it in its fight with ETV over the encryption of digital broadcasts. And in fact, in the final contract that was signed a month later, which I have a copy of, that clause was retained, specifically stating that SABC may not carry its free-to-air channels on a platform that is encrypted. And the suggestions at the time that the contract was initially leaked said that, you know, this is MultiChoice using a commercial contract to exert pressure on the public broadcaster in an effort to influence government policy on encryption, which at the time the government was flip-flopping on which way to go. And we know that MultiChoice and ETV were engaged in a high-stakes battle with each other. It was very ugly, very acrimonious. And so this document has emerged of the minutes of this meeting, where both Imtiaz Patel and Nolo Letele exerted enormous pressure on and basically said this deal is non-negotiable if this clause is not included. It's pretty damning stuff. We're running a story on this afternoon. The reason we haven't published yet, News 24 has published something on this, and I think there have been one or two other reports already based on Phumzile van Dam publishing this document, but there's more to it. I can't say any more at this stage. I'm going on to a call immediately after this podcast, but look out for the story later today. It's pretty sensational stuff, and I think that Naspers, which owns MultiChoice, needs to start to deal with this. So far, it's just been a series of denials from MultiChoice, but there are very serious accusations here that MultiChoice was trying to influence government policy through commercial contracts and leveraging its power in the industry, to buy content from various sources. To try and influence government. Now, you know, MultiChoice to date has denied these allegations, saying they're absolutely rubbish. But these minutes from this SABC MultiChoice meeting, which took place at Auckland Park here in Johannesburg, which is where the SABC is headquartered, they raised the stakes quite considerably. And I think that Naspers, Bob van Dijk, who's the CEO, or Chris Becker, who's the chairman, need to step in, because this is spiraling out of control, and this has a huge reputational and potential commercial impact for MultiChoice. We've already seen a lot of noise on social media from people around the ANN7 deal saying that they're cancelling their DSTV subscriptions. This is not good enough. We're not funding the Guptas. We don't want to be associated with this. Now, whether that's having any sort of real meaningful impact on the number of MultiChoice DSTV subscribers at this point is unclear. As Andrew said in the podcast I recorded with him yesterday, it's probably just a lot of noise because, you know, people still want to watch their rugby.
Those guys still want to watch rugby, exactly.
How many cancellations will there actually be? But what is true is that this is having a very real impact reputationally on MultiChoice. It's a crisis for them, and they need to be seen to be dealing with it and being open and honest about what has transpired here. And as I wrote in a column a couple of days ago, if necessary, if there were transgressions here, then people need to be held accountable. So, but
it's
more on
never
this.
Never easy. Never more, easy in this country, is it?
More on the story this afternoon.
Can't wait to hear.
You've read the draft I've produced, but yeah. I can't say anything more about it just yet. But later today. So, what else do we need to talk about? The Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. Talking about disasters.
Train wrecks.
So government's published the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill, which is the first step to implementing the National Integrated ICT Policy White Paper, and it's very problematic. MTN has come out most strongly, I think, along with the Free Market Foundation in condemning it. Vodacom is also, in a very carefully worded statement, not to trod on too many toes, has also criticized it. But Telkom and Cell C haven't really commented. Telkom said they're going to study it. Cell C basically just said no comment, which I thought was a little surprising given that this is, you know, this has a direct bearing on them. But I suppose they need a chance to study it in some detail. But the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill basically is forcing through the creation of the Wholesale Open Access Network, which we've spoken about in some detail on this podcast before. I personally think it's a dreadful idea. There are the contentious components of this. The threat of taking away the spectrum, the existing spectrum from the operators, is still there, which is major, hugely problematic, and on its own can be challenged in the Constitutional Court, I'd imagine. It's the stuff around the WOAN is interesting. They say that any additional spectrum that goes to the operators, they'll have to roll out in rural areas first before they roll out in the cities, which is an interesting one because the demand, the pressure on spectrum is in the cities. But I've written quite a bit on it already, so go have a look at the website. It's a problematic piece of legislation. The Free Market Foundation also condemning it for only giving people until, I think, around mid-December to comment on it, just as everyone's getting ready to go on holiday.
That's a planned time to make sure that minimal...
Well, that's what Leon Lowe from the Free Market Foundation said. He said this is very clearly a deliberate strategy to minimize the ability of the public and the operators, et cetera, to comment on what is a crucial piece of legislation, pending legislation. So they've called for an extension. I think Vodacom also has insisted that that they'd be allowed more time to comment on this. But it needs detailed interrogation. Unfortunately, I've seen nothing in the mainstream media on it. I suppose they're too busy with other things, but it's a very serious.
Well, this has got implications. It touches everybody, and I think we've seen something similar in the US when they've been going through a lot of their. I mean, they're still going through some of their net neutrality issues, but the problem is education in the masses. You know, people don't understand that they don't look over it. So the fact that it's not reaching mainstream media is because people don't look, people don't understand it, so they kind of just think it doesn't really affect them.
Yeah, the US net neutrality one is interesting. I used to be a proponent of net neutrality. The more I look at it, the more problematic I think it is. If you've got a properly functioning market, you don't need it. I can see the appeal of it. It seems like a consumer-friendly thing to do. But if you have a properly functioning, competitive infrastructure market in the telco space, then you shouldn't need it because... An ISP that chooses to block Netflix, for example, is shooting itself in the foot because...
And we won't subscribe to that.
You won't subscribe to that service. You'll go to another operator. I'm not sure that net neutrality is necessary. And it has implications as well in, you know, providing quality of service. You know, you can say to... You know, you can sell a cheaper broadband connection and say, well, okay... Here's a cheap package, but we're going to throttle your YouTube. Now, that might be in breach of net neutrality regulations.
Yeah. Like we've seen here, as capacity increases, the value of data is coming down. So that's almost not even appealing to the consumer anymore. You don't want to put any barriers in place where people are able to make more money off of it. And I think that's kind of where the problem is. Who's benefiting, and even with the Communications Amendment Bill, who's benefiting from... The ultimate changes that's going to be made.
Yeah, well, that's the other question: who are the shareholders going to be in this wholesale open access network, and why? That conversation will no doubt be one we have in 28.
Stay tuned for that podcast.
But yeah, the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill, very problematic piece of legislation. The Free Market Foundation is holding a press conference on it next week, which should be quite interesting. I think it's on the 6th of December. So there's that, yeah. But if you want to read more about it, go check out Tech Central. We have written quite a bit about it already. We need to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity for business, for life, for you. and being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So, ICASA, data expiry plan, announced about 2 weeks ago now. 3 years on all packages. This is an amendment from a previous data expiry proposal, which was roundly criticized because it appeared to penalize the poor in that smaller data bundles would expire much quicker than larger data bundles.
30 days or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, if not less. I think it might have been 10 days.
Oh, 10 days, you're right.
And up to, I think it was 24 months or... Yeah, I think it was 24 months. Now, they've said 3 years across the board. If you buy 1 megabyte or a gigabyte, obviously until it's used up.
Until expired, yeah.
I don't know what to make of it. It's it's a regulatory intervention, and the problem with regulatory interventions is they almost always have an unintended consequence.
Yeah, yeah.
In this case, I think the operators might argue that prices will go up. Whether that is actually the case, I don't know, but certainly it'll have an impact on the availability of numbers, because the operators are going to have to keep these numbers in service for much longer than they did before. Does it mean we're going to run out of telephone numbers? Because every SIM has a number associated with it, even if it's not used for voice calls.
Yes, you can't expire the SIM
for 3 years.
It's not being used, yeah.
Yeah. And right now the operators are regularly expiring numbers to reuse them.
Yes.
That's, I guess, a reasonably easy problem to solve. You just issue more numbers.
I'm sure we can just put a zero something else before it.
Add a prefix. Or just, I mean, we've already got so many numbers, prefixes allocated to mobile. There's 072, 062, 064, 074, 076, 082, 081. I mean, there's so many different number ranges now.
Yeah.
Maybe just add some more prefixes. And if we run out of prefixes, then I don't know what the technical implications would be, but certainly the UK has at one point added another number so that their telephone numbers are, I think, 11 digits.
Yeah. I think that would make things a little bit more confusing than adding from the base.
Yeah.
Just adding more digits in the beginning. Well, using the other digit ranges in your number range, at least.
I suspect there are all sorts of technical complications with adding a number.
Yeah, like, you can't check for a 10-digit cell phone number. You have to check for 10 and 11-digit cell phone. So you never know if it's wrong or not.
And I don't know if they have to change the entire numbering system to add a number to everything.
Let's go over to Klingon. The Klingon system, I believe, has got more characters. No, I don't know. I'm just talking crap. But, look, I mean, I think it's a good win for consumers, definitely. I mean, the fact that you can now have data...
But is it? Last,
well, I mean, the fact that your data won't expire, I don't know, the 3-year number seems very long. But
it's not a win for consumers if prices go up.
If the prices go up, it's not. But the fact that my data won't expire, to me, that's a win. The fact that I can now buy a 10 gig, give it to my mother, and know that she'll be able to use it until it's done, not having to force through a 30-day. It makes the management of, I guess, data for us techies that provide technical support to loved ones much easier. Yeah.
I think the operators are actually to blame. They've brought this on themselves through their aggressive data expiry plans. I mean, the fact 30-day expiry is ridiculous. No carryover on many of these plans. They brought it on themselves. Mm. I mean, you buy 10 gigs of data at the beginning of the month and you use 1 gig of that data and you lose 9 gigabytes.
Well, I've been losing data every month for the last few years because, you never reach your cap. I've got, I think, a 6 or 7 gig account.
Yeah.
If that starts rolling over, I can drop my account less to a lesser amount.
Unless the operators know this, which is why they don't do it.
Well, that's exactly. So that's the negative impact on their side. But for me, again, as a consumer, I'm holding on to my data a bit.
Yeah. But the question is, do the operators, which are now answerable to shareholders, put their prices up to counteract the fact that you're probably going to move on to a lower data bundle?
Well, I'll still be a regular customer. So, I'm sure there will be something will need to rectify the balance. But it's not right that they keep ripping us every month because our data expires just because we're not using it. I mean, if I buy 12 eggs and I don't use 3 of them, maybe that's the wrong analogy, but, you know, they're still there. It's not, they're not getting taken away from the case. You know, I can still eat them if I want to.
I know the analogy that one of them has used, I forget which one, might have been Vodacom, I'm not sure, was that it's that data is akin to timeshare. You either use it or you lose it. I don't know if I buy that model, that comparison.
But I mean, we understand technically how all of these things work. We know how data from our device gets out into the internet. We know the path. Mm-hmm. We know the setup. It shouldn't be a case of expiring data. I mean, I agree that there should be kind of some cap on it. You can't have it forever. I mean, if you pay for it, you need to have a lifetime. But, there still needs to be a balance between a 3 or 4 or 5 month rollover. Give us some options so that we, you know, if I want to, there was a time, I think maybe 3 years ago, when people were out buying 10 gig packages and then just using it because it would last for, I think, 2 or 3 months. There was a bundle available like that. That makes a lot of sense because you can use your data until it's done, not have to rush through every month. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, we need to trial this and see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is either. But I mean, I've got no sympathy for the mobile operators over their aggressive data expiry. And I think ICASA is probably justified in intervening in some way. Whether 3 years is overkill, I don't know. It sounds like overkill to me at face value.
3 years of technology has changed so much in any case. I think the underlying data, I mean, the mail that you would have sent with a 10 meg, probably going to require 20 meg data to send, you know, I'm just hypothesizing.
Even a year sounds long to me. I mean, 3 to 6 months maybe. But, I mean, how do you determine what it should be? I mean, ICASA is still going to have hearings on this, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of the arguments put forward about the impact that this will have on the networks. And it'll be interesting to hear what the various arguments are.
I wonder if has anybody looked at the data, the numbers? I mean, how many customers across the networks have data that expires, and how much is that, and how much is, you know, if they were to roll over? So me as an average consumer, for example, if I have 1 gig over at the end of every month, do they have? I would like to know if they've got those numbers, because surely that should give them an indication of what they're in for. Should, you know, because those people that would have maybe bought every month now buys every month and a half.
Yeah. They can certainly do the planning on their networks. I mean, if they claim that this affects their ability to plan their networks, I think that's a nonsense argument. I think they do have an argument that this would have an impact on their revenues because people wouldn't be buying as often. And, you know, so consumers would save money, but the operators would lose money. And so the operators argue that prices are going to go up, but in a properly competitive market, they shouldn't be in a position to be able to put prices up in the first place. So I suppose the question then is the market sufficiently competitive to ensure that if ICASA introduces these regulations, prices don't go up? That I don't know. The market's dominated by 2 big players, but 2 feisty smaller players are also there.
But me as a consumer, am I wrong to say that, and this might be a complete naive point of view, but I'm paying for data. Why does it expire? I'm paying for that amount. I mean, it's only an infrastructure that these operators have developed that is forcing me to, it's forcing the industry to expire them in 30 days for whatever reason it was. But surely if I pay for something, that's rightfully mine.
That's where they bring in the timeshare argument. They say they've got to do network planning and you're purchasing a bundle of value which is valid for a period of time, and there was an investment in the network to create that network for you to use that during that period of time. And if that data doesn't expire, then it messes with their ability to plan their networks.
I might do 2 megs more next month, and they didn't plan for that.
But you think these things average out, though?
But that's what I would think. You know, they would know that I had a 10-gig bundle, and over the next, let's say, 3 months of expiry, 6 months of expiry, that may come into play. But again, we know the infrastructure. We know the capacities on the back end. We know that an SMS and a voice call doesn't cost the amount of money it does. We know that a packet of data, a bit, costs. I mean, yes, these businesses need to make money. I'm not taking that away from them. But it doesn't. It's not that kind of a thing that the value really falls away. I mean, that's still a 10 gig that I need to use. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see what the comments is from the public, and we need to hope that people are actually going to.
And what the operators say. The public never commented these things, even though they're public hearings. But I think those hearings are coming up quite soon, so it'll be interesting. It'll be a big bun fight, I suspect. But yeah, no, no sympathy for the operators because they have kind of brought this on themselves through that aggressive expiry of data. Did you buy anything on Black Friday?
No, apart from some Steam games, which I just, it's just a good old sale.
Yeah.
No, I do work in an industry where we had that question where we discussed should we do something, should we be involved, but no, I didn't partake in it. And stayed away from it.
Yeah, I also bought some games on Steam, but that was about it.
I looked around. I try to see what everybody else is doing. But the problem is, a lot of guys are, so they're either selling old stock or they're not selling at a good enough discount. Yes. We're not like in your intro. You were saying, that it's a American tradition that's just become a sales thing across the world. Give the opportunity for retailers to sell more.
But in the U.S., you get real discounts. And
you get real value, yeah.
Looking around on the local websites, I couldn't actually see much that was really cool. It knocked down. And where stuff was cheap, it was old stock that people were getting rid of, like old GoPros, for example.
Yeah. And there's a place for that, but, Black Friday isn't, rather sell it in a different form. I guess everybody's just latching on to everybody's knowing that this is a big sales spending before the Christmas.
Yeah.
I did see some really good prices on Lego, and I was very tempted to buy that. But again, at the end of the day, the discounts weren't that amazing. They were better prices, but it wasn't like, if I miss this, I'm going to seriously lose out. Yeah. It wasn't 50% at all. I would have liked to buy some stuff on Takealot, but...
Well, we'll get to that. That didn't happen. We're going to get to that shortly.
Look, yeah, Black Friday, like I was saying, I also work in an industry where we got customers and we sell stuff to people, and we made a conscious decision. We did one little thing, but we didn't push it at all. We didn't really want to do a big thing because you lose value as a retailer. We can't sell our new products at 50% off. It might be great for the customer, but you're shooting yourself in the face, really, because you're losing that value. For what? For a handful of people getting a really good discount and probably never coming back to your store because they're just shopping online.
Yes.
It's a very tricky thing for a retailer to be in, because if you're not there, you're not part of the noise. But if you are there and you're not making a big enough discount, people are going to say, but this isn't Black Friday special. Consumers aren't stupid.
Yeah. So, I was quite underwhelmed. I saw scenes. I didn't go to a shop on really Black Friday. It's a day I try and avoid the shops, actually.
I've seen some footage.
Some video footage of stampedes and just mayhem in places like Checkers and
Game. I saw one in Canal Walk. So one of the windows got broken. It's crazy.
Crazy stuff.
It just shows you consumerism and people buying, wanting to spend money on stuff they don't need. It's alive and kicking.
Indeed. So thank goodness no more Black Friday for another year.
I'm thinking of starting something new. Should we call it Wacky Wednesday? Oh no, that's been taken. Okay. Yeah, let's keep the sales. Let's keep the sales to the side.
Yes. I probably shouldn't have a dig, but I'm going to have a dig anyway. The websites that publish stories, endless stories about this Black Friday special and that Black Friday special, new websites that are pretending to be reputable news sites publishing these hundreds of these stories. I'm not going to name names, but geez, throw your credibility out the window by publishing what is in effect advertising for these companies.
Catalogs
and might get you lots of traffic, but it doesn't do anything for your credibility.
Yeah.
But let me leave that there. Let's move on to our regular features and our winner and loser of the week. Let's start with our loser, because they really are a massive loser.
And I don't know how this happened.
That's
really.
Takealot.com. Seriously, guys, this is the biggest day of the year for you. You build the platforms that allow you to scale when the traffic comes to your website. No. Just shortly after midnight on Black Friday morning, Takealot's website goes down and is down for much of the day on your biggest shopping day of the year, because you haven't scaled your platform, or you haven't load tested it or whatever you needed to do. We don't know exactly what went wrong because they haven't explained it, but...
They said a module went faulty somewhere, so knowing websites, I can only imagine something broke that maybe wasn't the main site. But if we look at again how these things work, you have
fix it quickly.
Data that's hosted on a server, and that server's got capacity, it's got RAM, it can accept so many connections. But if the software, underlying software, if there's something, the capacity might be there, the server might be able to handle it, but if a poorly written module brings everything down, You know,
but in the time it took them to get their website back online, they could have spun up an entire new website in Amazon or something. And
yeah, I mean, for that to be out that long, I mean, it must have been a crucial module. Mm. It must have been something that affects everything. Maybe it was to do, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I would be speculating. But it shouldn't happen with a retailer like that.
I mean, I don't know to what extent you can load test a website prior to this sort of thing, or whether.
Yeah, but it's not rocket science. I mean, you can scale. You can see one person costs so much in your resources. Yeah. I mean, these guys are cleverer than me, and I can kind of figure it out.
What's unforgivable is that this is not the first time this has happened. As far as I can recall, it happened last year as well.
Yeah.
It's shoddy. You know, if you want to build, I mean, this is the biggest online retailer in the country. If you want to build a major online business and start to build the Amazon of South Africa, that you can't let this stuff happen. You seriously can't.
It shouldn't happen.
It shouldn't happen.
I often like to think of it, and you know, online stores are—it's the new brick and mortar, right? It's your shop face. It's the first thing people see when they come to your business, and it's really as good as having a big sale and basically moving your entire building to another location, not telling anybody.
Yeah.
You absolutely cannot have that.
I had to laugh at the message they had up on their website there. It said, "The store is currently full."
Maybe somebody thought they'd be clever and just deflect some of this.
Anyway, that's our loser this week, Takealot. And our winner this week is also involved in the e-commerce space, and that's OneDrop, startup business.
We wrote about them a few years ago.
Yes, you interviewed the Simon Hartley, the CEO, their founder and CEO.
They just started up.
And Backrow's just bought a majority stake in them, undisclosed sum. But Macro bought them out, so there is a successful tech startup. And
we'll soon see more deliveries directly from Macro, I would assume.
Yeah, they're looking at dramatically speeding up their deliveries. I think they're talking about deliveries within 2 or 3 hours of your order.
Wow. Yeah, OneDrop is the kind of guys that, I mean, that was how they set themselves up.
Yes.
I would love to see that. I mean, I guess, you know, we were just talking about Amazon, and the guys like Macro and these guys, in terms of what they sell, they're the guys that's going to compete with Amazon in those bulk purchases. You know, give me 56 rolls of toilet paper and deliver it tomorrow morning, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. Those are the guys that's going to make an impact. And an acquisition like this, clever move, I think.
Mm. Very clever. Very clever. So, what's your pick this week, Richard?
Oh, I've got something cool. First look in South Africa. These things literally just landed.
Ooh.
A company by the name of Maxtech is bringing them in. Max is a good friend of mine, and he's got all these cool toys. So this is his latest little gadget. Now, what I'm holding in my hand is something that looks very much like the GoPro Euro Session. It's exactly the same size.
Yes.
But this is a light. So, I mean, it's got an let me just give you the spec here. It's a 57,000K daylight, so it's great for shooting because it's pure daylight color. 2200 lumen, and it gives you up to 4-hour battery life.
Wow.
But just have a look at that thing. I mean, it's designed to provide lighting where you can't take a big lighting rig.
Mm.
So you can mount it to a drone, you can hook it up, you get some accessories that you can hook it up next to your action camera, your GoPro, your Garmin Verb, and it'll provide light. You can even mount it to your bike. It's got some threads in it, so you can screw it onto a tripod. Like I said, there are some really cool accessories. Now, this is my favorite accessory. It's a diffuser, and this is what I'm going to be using extensively. The reason why I got these was to shoot in a studio environment with. So I've got two of these, and in a relatively close proximity to me, I would be able to then shoot and have myself or have a subject lit perfectly without too much of a payload in terms of weight and size. If you hold the button down, it'll actually switch off. The lighter, I mean, there's another product in the market that is similar to that called the, I completely forgot the name. Anyway, there is something else similar, but what I like about this is the fact that it is rugged. It's a metal body.
Very nice.
It can go underwater like that. It is, I think it's about 10 meters, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 50 meters.
Wow.
But again, the thing is you get a little plate accessory, or you get a GoPro mount accessory too, so you can mount it to any GoPro accessory.
Yeah, it's very cool. I like the fact that there's mounts on both the back and the
bottom. Yes, so you can move it around. Mm. Like I said, the fact that this is very bright
yeah.
and it's a white light is what's really appealing to me. And with this diffuser on, I like it. This is pretty really interesting. Cool. I haven't shot any real video with it, so I need to report back on what that looks like. But the retail price of this, if you're interested, is 17x VAT, so that'll probably make it just about 2,000 Rand. Like I said, you can go to maxtech.co.za. You just landed a few of these. I got mine yesterday. So I would recommend checking it out.
Yeah, that is very cool. I'm actually amazed at how much torch technology has advanced with LEDs over the last few years. Mm. I'm going to be picking a torch as my pick sometime in the next couple of weeks. And I'm blown away by what this thing can do.
Portable light and LEDs, I'm so excited about it. Yeah. Like, I've been looking at some panels for studio use, and they're fantastic, but they are very expensive.
Yeah.
You can look upwards of 8 grand a panel.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, what they do is, you know, that they're perfect for their job. But for small studios and one-man bands like myself, you know, something like this where I can put a few of these in a bag, you know, I can light up so much. If I add a third or a fourth one, you know, now all of a sudden you've got like surround light and you can do some really interesting things. And the fact that it's 4 hours, you can run it off the power as well, so you can run it for longer if you want.
Nice. Very cool.
I like it.
Great. I've got two picks this week, very briefly. My first one is Flight Radar 24. It's a site and an app that's been around for quite a while. And there are a lot of competitors out there, but I particularly like Flight Radar 24. I found on a Saturday morning, I'm sitting outside having a cup of coffee, relaxing, and you know, a lot of planes come over like 7, 8 in the morning, and you think, I wonder what that is.
Where are they going, yeah.
Fire up the app, and you can see what it is. Oh, there comes the A380 Air France from Paris, or oh, there comes the, you know, Delta Airlines from Atlanta. Yeah. And these things are, you know, it's quite fun to sit there and say, morning, and you see this plane that's coming over you now has been in the air for like 15 hours already. It's fascinating.
You can even track the ground, the baggage carts and stuff on the airport.
Yes, you can.
Zoom in.
Yes,
it's very cool to see that.
You can indeed. And obviously, if you click on one of the planes, you get a photograph and all the details. You get tons of detail if you pay a little subscription fee each month. But it's not really necessary. You get a picture of the plane, a flight number, you know, what airline it is, that sort of thing. If you're really geeky and into this stuff, then you pay for a subscription, you'll get all sorts of detail.
Yeah,
about
those guys that take photographs of the flights, they use that. They chase them to the airport, which make sure the right ones come in. They take photographs.
Yeah, very cool app. And the coolest part about it is the augmented reality.
The AR.
So you can actually, it's not as good as say X-Plane 11 or something, but you can get an idea of what the pilot is seeing by clicking a button in the app or on the website and get a view through the cockpit.
Yeah, just like a digital flight. I love it. And you can also, the other AR function on that is if you hold the phone up, put it in AR mode, you hold it up in the sky.
That's right.
And it'll show you where the planes
that's
are.
That's right, yes.
What a great app.
It's fantastic.
And it's free, I mean, for most of the functions.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And my second pick this week, we're talking about the Steam sale. I bought a game called Party Hard. Have you played it?
I picked it, actually. A while ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought
but
I
please, I would love to hear your spin on it because it is a great game.
I actually now remember you picking that, actually. It's probably been sitting at the back of my mind, which is why I saw it on Steam.
You bought it, yeah.
Bought it.
Subliminal advertising.
It was on sale for something like 20 bucks or something.
It's worth it.
So, what a brilliant game. Basically, the mission is to kill everyone at a party. it's like 8-bit graphics. It's not like a 3D shooter where you're going in and gunning people down.
It's a nice top down. You can sit back and, you know, in a break, toggle the controllers because it's basically up, down, left, sideways, and then a kill button.
Yes. And it's fantastic. And, you know, the trick is not to be seen. You're at a very busy party. You've got to sneak into rooms. You've got to kill people. You've got to avoid the cops. It probably sounds a bit bizarre to anyone listening to this who hasn't played the game, but it is completely addictive. I've been playing it for hours and hours and hours, and I can't stop.
I hear you. That's fantastic. And the add-ons are also great because they add different levels and different parties. And there's a beach scene in a building.
Oh, right. Okay.
So the parties change the whole time, which is fantastic. That's a great.
It's game. Quite hard as well. It
gets much more difficult.
But I see on Steam that there's a new version coming next year. Ooh, Party Hard 2.
That could be good. Yeah. That could make a good mobile game as well.
Yeah.
One-handed play.
Yeah.
That's what I love about Steam. All these kind of indie games that never really had a voice. I mean, how do you sell something like this unless you have a unified platform where you can have access to these type of indie games, these titles?
Yeah, for sure. So there you go. We've picked Party Hard twice now. So
must be good.
That is a high recommendation. And apart from our quiz results, that is our show. Rechat, do you want to do the first question?
Certainly. The first question. What regulations does the SABC want scrapped so that it can start to charge DSTV to carry its free-to-air channels? And the answer there is ICASA must carry regulations.
Black Friday is a U.S. concept. No, not that South African retailers noticed. It falls after an American public holiday. What holiday is that? And the answer is Thanksgiving, a holiday that commemorates a harvest festival celebrated by the Pilgrim Fathers in 1621.
And depending on which side of the fence, it's also a very dark public holiday in America. The third question, the government of Benin ordered the CEO of MTN subsidiary in the country to leave. Who is he? And the answer is Stephen Blewett.
Macro this week acquired a majority stake in which fulfillment startup, and that is OneDrop.
And the last question, Samsung is rumored to be announcing details of the Galaxy S9 at which trade show early next year? And obviously that is CES.
CES. Well, and not obviously, because that would be a break from the past where they've typically used... World Congress to announce it in late February, early March. So the rumor is that they're going to be announcing it at CES in Las Vegas.
But there's only one show at the beginning of the year.
CES.
That's the one that everybody kind of stays with.
Early Jan. No, it's madness. It's madness. I've been once. I don't think I'll ever go back. Partly because I just don't like Las Vegas.
I've never been. I'd like to go. I think it could be a lot of fun.
You've got to go once. Sure, but it's... I mean, imagine Monte Cassino on steroids.
Yeah, 24/7. All day. And you're in a desert, so it's not even cool.
It's a picturesque place, and you go to, you check out the Grand Canyon and that sort of thing. But Vegas itself, not my cup of tea, I have to tell you. Anyway, that is our show on this Wednesday, the 29th of November, 2017. We'll probably squeeze in two more before the end of the year, I'd imagine.
Maybe three. I'm not going away. I'm going to be here most of the time.
Okay. So episode 200 next Friday.
Yes.
We'll have to do something special for that, even if it's just a couple
of beers. I'll bring the beer. Yeah. And I've got some homebrew moonshine in the car. I'll bring that too. 70%. It would sit well with the audience.
We probably won't finish the podcast. And then for our last episode of the year, no promises yet, but we're looking to do something quite special.
Yeah.
We'll have some more detail on that soon, maybe in the next show. So, as always, if you've got any feedback, of course, send us an email. We've had some great mails this week. info@techcentral.co.za is the address. Or you can leave a comment under the post on the podcast on the website. Until next time, from Rechon and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.